This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the MMQB Podcast with Andy Benoit. I'm John Engel at Engel's Angle on Twitter. You can follow Andy at Andy underscore Benoit. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, and Stitcher. As I tell you always, we got another great show planned this week. Greg Cosell from NFL Films will continue our draft preview, running through the top tight ends, strong safeties, and free safeties in the 2015 class. And then Robert Klemko will tell us about his story on Bears legend Walter Payton, which will be published in the MMQB this week.
And we have NFC North at the end of this.
That's right. So we'll get back to our breakdowns of the offseason plans of the divisions, as we did with the AFC, now jumping over to the NFC. Andy, let's start with some news from around the league like we often do. One of the interesting topics from last week that we didn't have a chance to get to, it appears Colts won't be extending contract of head coach Chuck Pagano, and he reportedly turned down a one-year deal, which makes this even more interesting.
Yeah, I haven't been able to piece together what that one is all about. There's speculation that maybe it's poor relationship with GM Ryan Grigson. I even read something that said Grigson might be headed for the hot seat and that his contract hasn't been renewed either. Now, a few things to keep in mind. For one, all of this would be shocking because Pagano's been very successful as a head coach.
38 wins, 3 seasons.
Yeah, and even the year that he wasn't there, you give him a little bit of credit for that because you give him a lot of credit, in fact, because that was his first year. So he instilled the culture around the team. He had a kind of training camp and a preseason that allowed the team to prosper in his absence. I think that's a positive. And he also hires his assistant coaches. So the fact that Bruce Arians does a great job in that year when he's gone, well, Pagano's the one that got Arians, I believe, I don't know who else it would have been, that got Arians out of the fake retirement that he was in coming out of Pittsburgh. So he's been a well above average head coach in terms of results. And then for Grigson, other than the Trent Richardson trade, which was awful, really a bad move, other than that, he's been outstanding as a general manager. Drafting Andrew Luck helped, but they drafted a lot of other good players the year they got Luck, and they brought in guys through the draft several times over the last few years that have been key components to a team that went to the AFC Championship.
Now, as we know, during the Peyton Manning Colts years, the offense would get loaded up every single year, and the focus by Irsay in that organization was always load up the offense.
Yeah.
Do you think Chuck Pagano's getting the resources he needs to make that defense strong, or do you think that the mentality around that organization is still, just based on the roster, do you think it's still trying to replicate those Peyton years where we throw everything at the offense and the defense has to kind of trail behind?
No, I don't think they're doing that anymore, and I'm glad you mentioned Peyton, because the other thing I wanted to mention that I talked myself out of and forgot all about is that, I talked a circle back there, but the Colts, Jim Irsay doesn't always extend contracts before he has to. And we've seen that with his quarterbacks. He's let Manning's contract run out before giving him the long-term deal. And he's
waiting on Luck.
He's doing the same with Luck. So now coaches, it's a little bit different because it just is. It has to do with power and authority. And guys want to know that the person who's yelling at them to get their ass down the field when it's 120 degrees outside in the middle of August, they want to know that that guy's going to be there next year, because that's how they get them to listen to him. That's how they get their ass down the field. So it's maybe that's the case, although that's unusual. You know, again, it's the case that Irsay's waiting it out, but that seems unusual. As far as building offense or defense, I think they've made some investments on defense. They signed DeQuell Jackson. They signed Trent Cole. They signed Arthur Jones for bigger money last year. Signed Kendall Lankford this offseason. I believe they paid Robert Mathis before he got hurt. They went out and traded for Vontae Davis. So, John, they're building up this defense. And if anything, you could almost argue they've invested more in the defense than the offense during the past few years. I think those days are done as far as how they're building it. Part of the reason they didn't build the defense under the Manning era was that Tony Dungy was a cover two based, a Tampa two based defensive mindset. And when you play Tampa two, you don't necessarily need dynamic personnel other than pass rushers. and speed at linebacker. And they often had those at Indianapolis. They had some good linebackers there for several years in a row. They'd let the guys leave in free agency and then just draft other young, fast linebackers because it's not hard to teach the mental side of a cover two defense. So you could play rookies and you could play young guys on rookie contracts. So I think that's what they did more with the defense. And then they did have Dwight Freeney there. So I think that's a little bit of a misnomer that they didn't invest in the defense, but they didn't, but they had reasons why.
4-game suspension for Ray Farmer without pay, $250,000 fine to the Browns, all over some text messages.
Yeah, Pro Football Talk had an article that, and they were exactly right on this, that it would be more impactful to suspend Farmer now rather than weeks 1 through 4, which you could argue are the least impactful weeks for a general manager.
GM says it's my job is temporarily done, or at least the majority of it.
The hardest part, yeah, the heaviest lifting. I mean, a GM's job is never done, and they have to monitor. I bet those GMs know the bottom of rosters across the league better than even the top of rosters at
but
times.
If Ray Farmer can't make a phone call, then that, I mean,
right,
that's...
Well, but Mike Florio that wrote it, was also saying Farmer can work from home. He might be limited there on that, but I know, like Florio also mentioned, he'll take some film out of the building with him. Well, anymore... all the film is uploaded to a website. So everyone around the league has film access at all times. It's on this thing called the cloud. I'm not a computer guy.
It's the cloud.
Yeah, no, I was acting dumb because I saw you were already looking at me disparagingly before I'd even said anything.
No. I was just hopeful for it. I wasn't disparaging. I was a kid on Christmas there, just hoping for you to call it something.
Yeah, you're waiting
for
me
the 4G.
Up. Yeah. Well, so anyway, you can access it through the World Wide Web. And I wonder if they could just block his password or block his access on his computer. Now, yeah, because if he could block, I was going to say, maybe he'd find another place to sign in, but they wouldn't be blocking the IP. They'd block his, they'd do something to his password.
Now we're getting into some espionage.
Well, that's what this whole thing's all about, isn't it?
NSA, man.
We talked last week on this, I think. I don't know why they have a rule saying you can't text down to the sideline. They have a rule, no phones on the sideline. Occurred to me, if Farmer texted somebody, didn't someone have to receive the text?
Yeah, they would have had to actively pull a phone out.
So why aren't there two suspensions here?
I don't, maybe they just didn't look at it or didn't have
their
phone.
Well, they surely
I don't get it.
It's not like the NFL did not pay attention in an investigation.
I don't. Do you really think the coaching staff of the Browns wanted to know what Ray Farmer had to say during
That's
the game anyway?
Think. That's why I think it's – why is it even a rule in the first place? If you have a no phones on the sideline rule, then this is all a moot point.
Last year, if
I'm missing part of the story. I guess I haven't read everything there is to read about it because I haven't found any of this important, really.
Last year was Farmer and Pettins, both their first years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean – it's certainly not a head coach wanting advice from the GM in the booth or wherever he was. And then I just can't imagine that any coach on the, definitely not on the field, you'd be seen. It's too many damn cameras. And even more if Belichick gets his way.
Yeah. the irony of that too, by the way.
Oh yeah. Spying.
Wanting more cameras, Belichick. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say about this. It gives no advantage to the texting team to do this. There is no advantage at all. If anything, it's a disadvantage because the GM, as I've told you before, front office guys do not begin to know football at the depth that coaches do. I've learned that sitting down in meetings in these Indianapolis hotels every year with these guys, they don't begin to have the depth as a general level. Now, some of them do. I don't know where Ray Farmer is. I've never met him. But chances are there's nothing the GM could tell a coach during a game that would be of any value to the team. And there's plenty he could tell them that would be of a hindrance to the team.
Now, some expected the Browns to lose at least one draft pick in 2016 or an upcoming draft. The Falcons did lose a 2016 draft.
Well, Browns, the league probably thought Farmer's texting him about Manziel. The Browns have already given up their draft pick in this whole thing. Let's let it move on.
Two firsts. They got penalized two firsts.
Nice. The Falcons lost their pick, so.
And $350,000 for the noise pumping.
Pumping and crowd noise, a fifth-round pick. I don't know how big a deal this is. I think the punishment's fair. In fact, it's probably a little bit on the light side. I've heard some that have said crowd noise is a very big deal because offensive linemen, the way they get off the ball. that would be any more, that's probably the only advantage, because teams have figured out hand signals. You have to assume that the audio and the helmets has improved, just because that's the nature of technology. I mean, here's how we know it's improved. Remember, you used to see quarterbacks walking around with both hands up over to their ear holes?
Yeah.
You don't see that anymore. Quarterbacks don't cover their ear holes anymore. So crowd noise is not affecting the communication of teams the way it used to. So therefore, the only advantage I can think that it would bring is giving the defense has a jump off the snap, because the offensive tackles can't hear the signal, so they can lose that half a beat of a second. You could even argue, though, that the crowd noise hurts defenses, because those guys have to shout across the field to each other sometimes what the call is against these hurry-up offenses.
Or so, you could just use the posters like Chip Kelly used to in college with the different political figures or like celebrities and cartoon characters.
Did he put that stuff on them?
Yeah, see, you didn't watch college football, but
I didn't know he had those kind of emblems.
Oh, yeah, so he'd have like Lee Corso here and then like Big Bird and then, you know, just – and they all have their own meaning. Kind of cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just do A and B and C? And
all? Oh, too easy.
Too easy for what?
For the scientist, Chip Kelly.
It
wouldn't be this segment if we didn't touch on Chip Kelly at least once. He's made some interesting decisions.
Why would it not be this segment? Why would it not be this segment?
Because it's our around the league. That's what we do. LeSean McCoy's gone. Jeremy Maclin's gone. DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews coming in. And Miles Austin apparently joining the club this week. What do you think of D'Amico Ryan's extension?
So we're not doing Austin?
No.
Okay, I was prepared to do that.
Were you going to condescendingly move on and just say, John, we don't need that.
I was anticipating you pushing Austin.
Are we going to talk about David Bowe next? Dwayne Bowe? There's nothing worse.
Nothing worse than
screwing
up the
word.
You know, that happened to me a few weeks ago, and it was also on a Dwayne Bowe comment.
Was it?
Yeah.
Hey,
where I was spouting off and thinking I was being smart and then I said the name wrong.
I think he's the new Trent Richardson of this podcast.
Something like that.
Anyway, D'Amico Ryans,
I was surprised they extended Ryans, because they have Alonzo and they have Kendricks. Now, my guess is this extension, they gave them cap relief this year. So they probably gave him a lot of a bonus, and they added the years onto the contract so that the bonus would be prorated at a smaller amount. I don't anticipate D'Amico Ryans being on this team a whole lot longer. He might be on this team this season, but clearly they have other plans in mind, because Alonzo's young and Michael Kendricks is young, and D'Amico Ryans can only play inside linebacker. And if they're going to run a true 3-4, which Bill Davis wants, and that's what Chip Kelly most importantly wants, then they're not going to kick Kendricks or Alonzo to outside linebacker, because those are pass rushing positions, and neither of these guys are pass rushers. So there is no spot left on this team for D'Amico Ryans. There's no playing time left for him, because I was going to say maybe you put him in the base package. He's better against the run than he's been against the pass. But who are you going to take off the field? Because Alonzo and Kendricks, while both very good in pass defense, arguably that's the strength of both of their games, they're also better than Ryans at this point in his career against the run.
Now, another linebacker, Rolando McClain, once out of football, 18 months ago,
something like that,
comes in for the Cowboys in injury relief, plays pretty well for them. Now visiting the Patriots, are you surprised by some demand for Rolando McClain?
Well, I don't know how much their demand really is there, because the team that knows him best right now, Dallas, they basically have said, it sounds like they've said, we'll take him back at $700,000 a year, which
minimum means
they can live without him. They don't see much of a point to having him back if he's going to cost a lot of money. So that tells you everything you need to know. If that doesn't tell you enough for some reason, then the fact that he's still out there and available also tells you something. I don't know where he would play in New England. I mean, Dante Hightower has a shoulder injury, so maybe he fits in there. But we've talked before about Jerod Mayo coming back, and you're plugging him in next to Jamie Collins. So McClain would be acquired strictly for depth purposes. And he's not a dynamic pass defender either. He's not Jamie Collins, certainly. And I don't think he's as good as Mayo would be in pass coverage. Now, that question is whether Mayo can still move as well, but a shoulder injury should not impact his movement. So I don't read much into this. If McClain signs with New England, great. I think there are much better opportunities out there for him, though. If I think he needs to go to a team, if he's only getting $1 million a year or less, which it sounds like that's what he'll be getting, then he needs to sign a one-year deal with a team that's going to give him a chance to play and get back on the field. Because if he has a season again like he just had, and he keeps his off-field stuff in line, which he, you know, there's questions about that because of he had his house, I think, caught on fire. It was suspicious, you know, the kind of stuff where you wonder what's going on in his personal world. But if he gets all that in line for a second straight year, he's going to get a big contract next season. He's not going to get paid $20 million guaranteed, but he'll get $8 to $10 million guaranteed somewhere. So I would sign wherever you can play in a 4-3 and they need you. And that might be Dallas, but I guess Sean Lee's coming back. McClain's a true middle linebacker too.
We're talking about finding playing time for all of these guys. Now, Akeem Ayers, the defensive end for the Patriots last season, went over to the Rams on a 2-year deal. Do you think that works out? He was on a 1-year deal for the Pats last year, just kind of on a fill-in role.
I'm surprised. What's his contract in St. Louis?
2 years, $6 million. So
I'm surprised New England didn't want him back around that price point.
Especially 1.5 roster bonus. That's it.
$1.5 million roster bonus. Because Ayers was brought in mid-season, and I would have to believe that if he had a chance to learn the system, the full breadth of the system in the offseason, he could be a pretty good player for him. He's flexible. He's multidimensional.
Made the game-saving play on Marshawn Lynch.
All right.
I told you. I'm not going to let you forget
it. Some people have credited Hightower with that play.
Some people have. Have you?
I don't remember the play. I don't remember the specifics of it. They're building quite a pass rush rotation in St. Louis. They already had the best starting four in the league by far with Robert Quinn and Chris Long outside and Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers inside. They've added to that Nick Fairley inside, and now we're talking about Akeem Ayers, who is an upgrade over Kendall Lankford, at least in terms of pass rushing, just pure pass rushing. And also Eugene Sims is back, who I think is a pretty good player. He can play every third series, and he'll be a defensive end or a defensive tackle at times. So this is an unbelievably stocked defensive line. I mean, this is the best D-line in the league, and who I would even venture to say whoever is second best is well back in the rearview mirror.
Now, this seems like as good of time as ever to transition over to the NFL draft. Greg Cosell now joining us. Okay, Greg, we'll first get started off with the tight ends, and we'll begin with Max Williams from Minnesota, who is projected by most to be the first tight end taken, with quite a bit of separation between him and the next best guy, so to speak. Why is this the case, or are these projections off?
Well, you know what? I don't usually worry about the projections. I just tell you what I see, and I trust my eyes. So I think that Williams is an athletic tight end. I think he's a matchup tight end, the kind of guy who can align all over the formation. He can dictate matchups for himself and other receivers. I wouldn't say he's Julius Thomas in terms of his fluid athletic movement. He's not quite that level, but he certainly has plus athleticism. He's got very smooth route acceleration. He's really a pass-receiving tight end with the movement and speed to stretch defenses vertically, and he can win versus linebackers and safeties. He's even won versus corners. So he's that kind of tight end. In this so-called era of passing football, he's a receiving tight end.
So what did you think of his – I know you said receiving tight end, but Minnesota, you saw snaps of him blocking, I assume, and they ran a system that was conducive to that at times. What do you think of his blocking?
He wasn't really used that way, Andy. He was not really a line of scrimmage tight end. That's the thing. I mean, I think they often lined up with two tight ends, and he rarely ever lined up on the line of scrimmage. He was the move tight end. He was a receiver more than a blocker. So obviously he'll need to perhaps learn that in the NFL. Guys have done that. But he was rarely, I don't want to say never because that wouldn't be correct, but not that often did he line up in what would be considered the conventional line of scrimmage tight end position and block in the run game that way.
And when he blocks on the move, does that factor in? How important do you think that sort of a thing is? You call him the move tight end. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have to do that, obviously. He's certainly big enough that he's able to do that, but I think he'll need practice at that. Overall, I think he's a good athlete for a tight end. He's plays that stand out to me. I mean, he beat Ohio State corner Doran Grant on a vertical route outside the numbers. Those are the kinds of things that teams look for. They like tight ends that can create matchups. And I think he probably falls into that category. That's probably the reason that a lot of people look at him as the top tight end, because I think everybody, you know, wants that. Now, when you mentioned the blocking, and I think that he was the key thing when you look at a blocker who doesn't do it all often is you want someone who's a willing participant. You can teach him technique, and he was a willing participant. He was competitive. And I think that's the important part.
Real quick, then, who's the stylistic comparison?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think he probably has some similarities to a young Jason Witten with his combination of size and movement, maybe a slightly better natural athlete. But a long way to go to get to where Witten was as far as subtleties of route running and winning versus man and zone. But I think that's... you know, people forget Jason Witten was a third-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there may be some similarities. But like I said, he's probably a little better athlete.
Greg, you just touched on how everyone wants to point at the tight end as being a component of the passing game now, all these receiving tight ends. Clive Walford's been kind of distinguished as that kind of guy. Do his struggles or inadequacies maybe in the pass blocking worry coaches at the next level, or do you think that's something that you're more comfortable with going on to the NFL?
You mean being a pass protector?
Yeah.
You know, I think that Walford is a little more of a combination blocker receiver than Williams at this point, because he lined up far more often on a conventional tight end position. Now, he also was a move tight end at times with shifts and motions. But I think he's probably a little more advanced and refined as a route runner than Max Williams. Max Williams relies a lot more on his athletic ability. Walford worked the middle of the field effectively. Now, he's not as fast a straight-line accelerator as Williams, but I think he was probably a little more effective at this point between the numbers. To me, Walford has the combination skill set to be a starting tight end in the league. Teams that run the ball more, he might fit those teams a little more than Williams, because he has far more experience as a run blocker, and he has a lot more experience working effectively in the middle of the field in the pass game. I guess if you're thinking of a comparison for him, you might see some similarities to Dwayne Allen when he came out of Clemson. You know, I think that's a combination blocker receiver.
Yeah, and I was thinking maybe Delanie Walker, because I think I got fooled by the number 46, but that's a similar type of player, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Walford could be a starting tight end in this league. Now, again, you know, all these guys, Andy, you know, we always talk about this. They're all prospects. So it's hard to know when a guy can reach that level, but I think he has the ability to be that kind of starting tight end, combination tight end.
Guys like him who move around a lot, do you think they have a steeper learning curve than the more stationary, for lack of a better term, more stationary tight ends?
Well, you could also make the opposite argument that therefore they provide more versatility, that they're able to handle different responsibilities because there's different responsibilities in different alignments. So I think that probably is an advantage for them.
You know, I had a conversation with the few people at the combine that pointed out to me, anymore next to quarterback coach, tight end coaches are the best offensive coordinator candidates because of how versatile the position has become,
right?
How much they have to teach, all the different stuff they teach, and on such limited time frames, of course.
Yeah, I could see that, because tight ends in the NFL nowadays are used all over the formation. Multiple alignments, they're used in a variety of ways in the run game and the pass game. So that makes sense.
Greg, Jeff Heuermann is more of a well-rounded package at tight end, or at least that's what it seems like every write-up wants to tell us. Is that the case? Is that what you see out of this group, that Heuermann is that more level kind of tight end?
Well, you know, I think you're dealing with a big tight end. He's about 6'5", 255. I think he's got very solid traits for the position, with a desirable combination of blocking and receiving. I think he needs to get a little stronger as a blocker, but he showed the ability to attack the seams. He's got good speed, and he's not a burner, not explosive, but very few tight ends you'd really call explosive, but he's got good hands. I think he'll be a targeted tight end for teams that like to run the ball out of base personnel and base formations. He's got a multi-dimensional skill set. Now, his production did not match his talent in an OSU offense that didn't feature the tight end a lot in the pass game. So for people who look at numbers, they're going to say, oh, he didn't do a lot, but he wasn't targeted a lot. I see Herman maybe down the road, and again, it won't happen his rookie season, but I look at Herman down the road and think, could he develop into a Heath Miller-type tight end with coaching and experience?
Greg, I want to just talk as a concept in general here. You mentioned Max Williams, and you said he might not, he's athletic, but he might not be the Julius Thomas. I went going back and looking at tight ends who have thrived in the NFL and where they were taken. Why wouldn't you go for the Julius Thomas? Because if you look at 2013, I think without argument, the best two tight ends from that draft have wound up being Jordan Reed and Travis Kelce. And they were both third-round picks, and they were athletic dynamos. Now, we're not doing 2014 because we don't know who's panned out yet.
Right.
2012 didn't have any great tight ends unless you want to throw Dwayne Allen in there, and I don't think we would call him great by any means. 2011, Jordan Cameron, fourth round. Julius Thomas, fifth round. 2010, you had Gronkowski in the second round, Jimmy Graham in the third, Hernandez in the fourth, and even back to 2009, it was Jared Cook in the third round, and he's panned out the best. I mean, why wouldn't you go look for the basketball player instead of trying to find the most polished tight end?
Well, I think there's not a lot of those guys, first of all, and second of all, it depends on what your definition of a great tight end is. Every team, I think, you know, they have their offense, and they want players who can fit what they do. I mean, theoretically, does everybody want a tight end who can line up outside the numbers and create matchups? I'm sure they do to some degree. But, Andy, how many of those guys are there in any given – there's, with the possible exception of Max Williams in this draft, and there's actually another kid from Rutgers named Tyler Croft in this draft who I actually like a lot, and he's not, again, a guy who didn't catch a ton of balls – so you're not hearing a lot about him, but I think he's got some movement similarities to Zach Ertz, who was the 35th player chosen the year he came out, and Croft is a far better and more competitive blocker than Ertz, but there's not a lot of those athletic tight ends, so then you look for the next best thing. It's like any position. You know, it's like a quarterback. Everybody wants Andrew Luck. There's not a lot of those guys. So then you have to look at, okay, what fits in what you want to do.
No, and I hear you, Greg. But all of these guys that we've mentioned here, and you said there aren't a lot of them, that's true, because I think every guy I've mentioned, that covers almost all the athletic tight ends in the NFL. But the guys we're talking about, none of these guys were drafted high, so they weren't the first, second, third, even fifth. So doesn't that suggest that the league and the guys that are making these decisions have to reevaluate the criteria for their decisions?
Well, I know you mentioned Jordan Reed, who was he, a third-round pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think the tight end position is still a multi-dimensional position, Andy. I still think it's a position that you're not just looking for a guy who's a receiver. I mean, the reality is, in the NFL, you do have to run the ball, and, you know, depending on how you want to run it, and that becomes team and scheme specific, you have to decide what kind of tight end fits that. You know, Jordan Reed, when he was at Florida, was not really a line of scrimmage tight end. He wasn't used that way very often. So if you want to line up and run the ball and you put him on the line of scrimmage, he may not be very effective doing that, and then that negatively impacts your run game. So it's, you have to decide. There's a lot that goes into this, and there's a lot of things that tight ends are asked to do.
We'll move on to strong safeties, Greg. Go ahead, Andy. We have one
thing. Greg, I have a feeling that you have an extra tight end or a few.
He mentioned Croft.
From Rutgers.
Yeah.
I mentioned the Croft kid.
Can you elaborate?
I really like on film. And again, I didn't catch a lot of balls. I'm not even sure he caught a touchdown this year. But it wouldn't surprise me if he is a guy who's drafted a lot higher than people think. What that means, I don't know. But I think he's got a really good skill set. He's a really competitive blocker, inline blocker, and he's pretty athletic. He runs very, very well. So Tyler Croft, to me, and again, I'm just trusting my eyes when I watch the film, I think he's a guy who may be drafted a lot higher than people think. He's not being talked about at all, really.
Where do you rank him among all the tight ends in this draft?
I mean, I think ultimately he could be the second best tight end in this draft.
Behind Max Williams, I assume.
Yeah.
Greg, strong safeties often left to cover these tight ends, so we'll slide over there. Landon Collins from Alabama, a bigger guy, 6 feet, 228 pounds, is said to be really good in run defense. Is this all that he can really do at the next level, or do you see him translating in more ways?
No, to me, it's funny. And Andy will know about this because we've had this conversation with coaches. I don't see Collins at the same level of prospect as Deone Buchanan coming out of Washington State last year. I mean, I think to me, Collins, he can drop down in the box against the run. He can likely play half-field safety. He can play a role as an underneath defender in a sub-package. That's what I see with Landon Collins. Landon Collins is not a complete player. And now it comes down to your defense. If you're looking for interchangeable safeties, he may not be your guy. He's a box safety. He brings toughness. He brings attitude. But he has significant limitations on the back end. I'm not sure he's as good a prospect as Jonathan Cyprian 2 years ago when he was drafted in the second round by Jacksonville. So, you know, and I have to tell you guys, and I know I'll be in the minority on this, but the more I watched Collins, the more I thought he might better transition to the NFL as a linebacker, kind of the way Thomas Davis did when he came out of Georgia years ago.
Well, really? That surprises me. I mean, I guess going back, I can recall the conversation now that we had about Collins. I'd forgotten that when we were preparing for this podcast. But that seems extreme to what you're saying, better as a linebacker. I mean, would he be best as a dime safety, dime backer type guy? Is that what you're saying? Or are you talking
That's
about
the way I think he'll start out in this league, yeah.
Okay, so, but when you say Thomas Davis, so you're also saying possibly every down 4-3 linebacker at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a very smooth and fluid athlete. I think at times he moved more like a linebacker than a safety. I don't think he's got the transitional and change of direction traits you really look for. I know he's rated highly, and I don't know who's doing the rating. You know, obviously it's not teams we're talking about. So I'll be very anxious to see truly where he's drafted and how he's used. I think he's ultimately going to be used as a dime linebacker in his rookie year, like Deone Buchanan. And I don't think he's as good a player.
Greg, my question for you in regards to Ibrahim Campbell out of Northwestern was going to be, make the case that he's better than Landon Collins in this draft, but you may have just done that.
Well, it's funny. When I finished with Campbell, I said not a lot of difference between Campbell and Collins, and you could easily argue that Campbell is a better mover with a more complete skill set. So they're similar style players. I think that Campbell showed some coverage traits, particularly in zone, that were a little better than Landon Collins. Now, there's questions with both these guys regarding their ability to play man-to-man coverage versus whether it's tight ends, whether it's backs, whoever. You know, obviously you start with tight ends. I think that there are serious questions about that. Now, both players, Campbell and Collins, have great playing personalities. They're aggressive. They're competitive. They play at a high tempo. I think they're smart players. I think they're similar players.
Is size a concern with Campbell?
He's smaller, yes. He's smaller than Collins. So is it a concern? Possibly. For some teams it might be. I mean, he's very well put together. He's just smaller, but he clearly moves more like a strong safety than a free safety. He's got a very compact build. He's a little tight, and Collins is the same way.
Greg, Cody Pruitt, free safety out of Ole Miss, is the highest-rated free safety among a lot of these lists that we're referring to, but he doesn't get placed until about mid to late second round. Does this surprise you about the group of free agencies that they're falling so late in the draft?
I don't think Pruitt's anywhere near the best player
interesting.
In this draft. I mean, I think that you're dealing with – you have Darren Smith of Fresno State and you have Demaryius Randall of Arizona State – and based on my film study, I would look at those guys far more highly than I would look at Cody Pruitt as NFL prospects.
So what are we talking about? Is this the Matt Barkley of free safeties? Where you're, no, I mean, Greg knows what I mean. Greg said fourth round pick, and that actually turned out to be exactly true. But is this, I mean, we're talking about a low mid round kind of talent here in your mind?
I don't think he's, you know, really athletic. You know, he's a big kid, but he doesn't show the attributes of a box safety. He certainly doesn't profile as a strong safety. His size and his range best transition as a free safety, but to me, there are concerns about his transition, his change of direction. I don't think he's a top athlete by NFL standards. To me, he fits best with defenses that play a lot of two-shell coverages. That would be, to me, where he'd fit best.
So the Bears will take him in round four, then. That's what they seem to do every single year.
And you know what? If that's the defense they're going to play, he might fit very well in it.
Right, and I guess that's actually the old Bears. It'd be the Bucks right. That would do it now, yeah. And they've actually signed Major Wright and Chris Conte, too, just to get the ball rolling there.
Well, that would be, I think, it's Tampa. Isn't Conte in Tampa now with Lovie?
Along with Major Wright, yeah.
And this is exactly why we have Greg on, because we get to compare him to what everyone else is saying on these draft boards. Is that what we're going to call them, Andy?
I know that's this time of year, that's what happens. There's a lot of, you know, quote-unquote mock drafts and a lot of lists. And I just watch the tape, and as Andy knows, it's not that I don't care what other people say, but all I can do for doing this for so many years is trust what I see and evaluate, project, and transition players. And I think that Demaryius Randall and Darren Smith are far better free safety type prospects than Cody Pruitt.
Greg, you just touched on it. Why don't we go with Demaryius Randall then, out of Arizona State? Kind of a ball skills guy that they're saying that the size might not be there, but he's good going after the ball?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the body type of a corner, and that could be a concern for some teams. He's got the smooth movements of a corner, too. He's got really light, quick feet. You know, the more I watched him, he was a guy that I knew nothing about when I put in the tape other than his name. And the more I watched him, the more I liked his overall movement. He's got some quick twitch. He's got some explosion to his movement. You know, I think his size and his athletic traits clearly transition best as a back-end safety, but he also has the ability to play over the slot because he moves like a corner. I think he's a little more sudden than Darren Smith, not quite as good playing, let's say, downhill in the run game, but I think as a back-end safety, he may be the best prospect in this draft.
Any concerns about a willingness to take on contact?
You know what? I thought he was willing to do it. The question really becomes size. He played with an aggressive mentality. He was really tough and competitive, but the size limitations could limit his effectiveness as a downhill player. And that's for some teams, that will absolutely be a concern.
Greg, let's finish with Darren Smith then. Like you just mentioned him a few times. What does he have that maybe some of these guys and the rest of the group don't have coming into this draft?
Well, to me, he's not Earl Thomas because few are, but I think he's got that kind of skill set, just not at that level. But I think he's not the overall athlete and explosive mover Thomas is, but I think he has the skills of a complete safety. He can move really well. He's a quick, decisive reactor. He's got very, very good movement. He's an interchangeable safety. You know, see, to me, a team like Philadelphia with Bill Davis, and again, I don't know what they're going to do, but he would fit what they want to do because he's got the ability to play in the box and be effective as a box player, and he's got the movement and transition to be a back-end safety. He was used as a blitzer. He was used all kinds of different ways. He's an interchangeable safety, and I think that for some teams, that's absolutely I would think most teams ultimately want that guy.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because we're seeing more and more dime packages these days as well, and those are the interchangeable packages, and I think the teams that have played it have really benefited from it. I'm thinking like Kansas City, Arizona, those teams come to mind, even Buffalo a little bit. But do you think we'll see more dime moving forward? You got to have the players coming into the league to do it, and this is not a good year for safeties in terms of depth and talent at the top of the class.
Yeah, I think you will, because I think guys will have specific skill sets that are ultimately limited, and then you need to find a place for them. You know, it's the old Bill Belichick approach of finding out what a guy does well as opposed to what a guy doesn't do. And I think that when, you know, we started with Landon Collins. I think Landon Collins could play the Deion Buchanan role as a dime, you know, linebacker slash safety and be really good at it. And I think that's what you try to do. You try to figure out how guys with specific skill sets fit best. You know, that's a mistake I made years and years ago, and now I try to do it a little differently, where I'd be so black and white in my evaluation. Oh, he can't do that, so he can't play. And then I realized that, you know what, a lot of guys play. And a lot of guys play 20 snaps a game or 30 snaps a game, and they're really good playing those 30 snaps in specific situations and with clearly defined responsibilities. So I think there'll be more guys who can do that, and I think you try to find what they do best.
All right, Greg, thanks a lot. What do you want to do next week, Andy? What do
we that's up to Greg. Well, Greg's offensive line, probably. Do we do
We can do that. I'll be. You know, now I'm working my way through pretty much everything, so we can certainly do that.
Okay, and maybe do we separate tackles and guards this year? Do we have enough guys at the position?
You know what? I think we should just pick some players, because I think there's a lot of guys in the class who will end up playing tackle, but maybe have better guard skills, and then I think it depends. You know, just as a sort of a segue to lead into next week, you know, everybody wants the dancing bear at tackle, and there's not a lot of those guys either, and there's a lot of guys in the NFL who you might not necessarily think of as ideal tackles with desirable traits, and you know what? They're starting tackles. So that's what's going to happen with this class as well.
Yeah, and there's no position, in my estimation, that has such more of a deviation in terms of, some people think it's hugely important, and some schemes it is, and other schemes you can get by with a David deal for 5 years and be just fine. So I think that would be an interesting discussion next week.
I agree. I think that's a great discussion.
All right, Greg, thanks a lot.
All right, guys, appreciate it. As always, thank you.
Robert Klemko, MMQB, joins us now. Andy, one of your close friends from Maryland. This is a new site for the podcast.
He's living with his parents again. You can just sense it. What's happened?
It's pretty accurate. I'm at my grandma's house because I'm allergic to my parents' cats. So this is the only place that I can sleep in Maryland.
And your grandma, she's like a parent, like a third parent to you, isn't she?
I mean, yeah, she's probably one of the top two parents, and then like either mom or dad gets bumped down to three.
You don't know which one would be bumped?
I don't know. They're kind of interchangeable.
But they've never been like a strong, like on the same page, it sounds like. They're never enough to both be, or one and two. Like one's either one, one's either three.
Right. I mean, it's just when you need different things. Like when I need money, dad's number one.
I got you. That's really well
Robert,
put.
We're giving you grief for being at grandma's house, but have you ever seen the top 10 shows on NFL Network where they run through the top 10 something?
Yeah, I was on one once, and I know Andy does them.
Which one were you on, Robert?
I don't know. They sit you in a room, and I was at the New York Super Bowl. They sit you in a hotel room, and then they just ask you from like a grid of like stuff that's happened in the NFL that you've seen, and then they just, you know, mix and match it towards the show. I was only able to answer like five things, and so I ended up on like two shows, but I don't remember what they were.
I'm watching this draft preview thing on NFL Network on a Sunday night, and then the top 10 list show starts playing. I don't even know what's going on, and they're rating the top 10 jerseys. And
I was all over that one because nobody else wanted
just
to do
wait.
It.
Number 10 is a baby-faced Andy Benoit talking about cheerleading uniforms.
Was that? Oh, so no, it must have been top 10 uniforms.
Yeah, it was top 10 uniforms, yeah. And number 10 was just in general all cheerleader
and
uniforms.
And I was like one of the only ones. It was, I think that was my first year doing it.
And you said your answer was, if I remember correctly, I don't pay attention to the uniform. I pay attention to where the uniform isn't.
Yes, that's right.
Andy.
It was the slimiest answer I could have ever met.
That is so creepy. And by the way, you don't have to say baby-faced Andy Benoit. That's redundant.
Is what? Really? Is that?
Well, you had a faux hawk or something, too. I texted you. You didn't think it was funny at all. I said you looked like a guy that, you know, did like car paint jobs and tinted windows like right off the freeway.
I was in the middle of a movie, so I wasn't texting back quickly.
What movie? Did you rewatch Boyhood?
No, I don't need to rewatch Boyhood. It was The Reader from 2009, Kate Winslet Academy Award.
Doesn't sound like something I'd enjoy.
Robert, have you seen, you saw Inception, right?
One time, and I just didn't feel like understanding it. It was so complicated.
Yeah, because when we were beginning this, and I was giving John instructions on, like, don't talk much before we record. Let's just get right into it.
Mm-hmm.
John's like, well, this is like Inception.
Well, and you wanted to seamlessly begin a conversation with Robert as if no one called him and no one told him, hey, Robert, welcome to the podcast. Like, he had just joined the conversation from
I
Maryland.
I wanted it to roll in naturally, and I didn't get the reference, and Robert said he didn't either, so I'm hoping this is where he backs me up.
I guess you lack emotional intelligence.
No, Robert, John's got this.
No, John, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, there are so many better analogies that you could have made.
Oh.
Yeah, John believes himself to be a movie aficionado. He probably, not a movie aficionado,
I've told
a film aficionado.
I've told you I like movies. I don't think that means I'm a movie snob. Yeah. I didn't like Boyhood, and he says I lack emotional intelligence.
Have you seen Boyhood?
I never saw Boyhood. I'm sorry, Andy.
12 years of a kid that turns into a loser and gets boring.
It's not about the kid. It's the concept. It's capturing different periods of time. And
right,
someone in their
right.
late 20s would appreciate the hell out of it. Robert, you need to see that. And will you watch it? And then, like, in within the next week or so, you can help me kick Engle as well?
Yeah. I mean, I always take movie recommendations. It's one thing that I take extremely seriously, so I'm going to watch it.
Robert, by someone in their late 20s would enjoy this, Andy means there are two Blink-182 songs.
See, I've heard that from John. Yeah, that's much better than the Inception reference. I like that you take movie recommendations seriously. I do, too, because the other day, a physical therapist lady I go to, like a trainer, was saying, like, oh, I had 2 hours to kill Sunday night, so I just turned on the TV to see what movie was on. Mm-hmm. And I was baffled by that. Like that's awfully lackadaisical. Like, if you're going to spend 2 hours watching a movie, why wouldn't you Google what the best movies are, at least Academy Award type stuff or highly rated ones, and watch something good? You don't just turn to USA or TNT and see the edited version at 10 o'clock at night.
You also haven't watched a commercial since like the 90s,
and that's,
right?
You know what? And she said the movie was horrible because there were too many commercials.
There you go.
What I will do is I go on my friends' Netflix accounts and see what they liked or they rated highly. And then I usually agree with that.
Okay. That works. That's also a little slimy because he won't pay the $8 a month, it sounds like.
Oh, it's definitely stealing.
That's
yeah.
less
yeah.
slimy, though, than grading cheerleader jerseys.
Not about the jersey.
Robert, your story, Walter Payton and Kevin Kelly. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to see this week.
Well, I mean, it comes out today, I guess, since the podcast gets released Thursday. So
or Tuesday, you mean?
Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. So, you know, I guess we can talk about it in the current tense since you guys have read it.
Yeah.
But, so the story is, it's kind of long. It's ridiculously long, but the gist of it is there's a guy who's a scouting director for the Chargers, really cool guy, Kevin Kelly. And it turns out that when he was like 17 years old, he's working out in the suburbs in Illinois at midnight at this health club. And the only other guy working out in there is Walter Payton. And he's trying to avoid Walter Payton because he figures Walter Payton doesn't want to be talked to because he's like this super celebrity. It's the mid-80s, you know. Walter Payton's already like the seventh leading NFL rusher, I think, at the time. And Payton comes over and asks him if he wants to work out. And they end up becoming great friends. He's like his assistant slash, you know, confidant slash Payton mentors him. Long story short, he ends up coaching his son, Jarrett, and his whole life now is about trying to find NFL prospects that kind of match that work ethic and desire that he learned from working out for years and years with Walter Payton.
I have a few questions, Robert, that I'm curious about. For one, how did you think to write this? Something, you obviously heard something from somewhere because you didn't just call up Kevin Kelly and happen to bump into Walter Payton's best friend.
Right. Well, it's funny. I think that, and I think I know you can sympathize with this, and I think John can. But you just kind of stumble upon this stuff, having casual conversations with people. I knew a scouting contemporary of Kevin's, and he told me this story about this kid who grew up basically under Walter Payton's wing. And I took the next step and saw, and, you know, reached this guy and asked if he would tell the story. And he hadn't told it to anybody, not because he didn't want to, but just because nobody asked. I think more often than not, you find that people just haven't been asked.
Yeah, yeah. No, I met with, this was like a few years ago before I was at MMQB. I think it was at CBS at the time or something, but I met with a...
Analyzing cheerleader uniforms.
All right. Actually, it may have been that same year. It actually may have been. I met with a really, really top executive at one of the big, big companies, and I was surprised because what he told me was he's never turned down a meeting because I'm, you know, I was like, well, why are you meeting with me? Or like, you know, why did you say yes or something? And he said he's never turned down anyone's meeting request, but he just doesn't get asked. He just doesn't get asked for meetings. People always assume that these people are untouchable.
It's that way with so many things. Like when I was at USA Today, we actually struggled in some aspects to find like the best interns because so many people don't apply for USA Today internships because they feel like they're not going to get them. It's ridiculous.
That's interesting. And what I liked about, so your Walter Payton story, what I really liked about are the, and you do a great job with kicking off stories with what they call the lead. And this, mm-hmm. when the story you shared just now, the synopsis, that's comprises most of your lead. And that was, you know, that was a great one. And then you ended with one. And I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to give it away. You can if you want. But what I'm asking is, are there any other anecdotes like that that didn't make it into this story? Just little illustrations of this Kevin Kelly guy just being around Walter Payton.
Mm-hmm. That didn't make it into the story. You know, you cut it out of the story and then you kind of cut it out of your mind. So it's hard for me to recall any of that. The one that I love that is actually in the story that I have no problem telling, it's actually bizarre. There's like this National Forest Preserve out near the Chicago suburbs. And Walter Payton, one day, working out with Kevin Kelly, this 18-year-old, decides that he's just going to take a football and run through the woods, these thick woods, as fast as he can, and just try to avoid running into a tree. And all these branches are exploding around him, and a couple times over the 6 or 7 years that they worked out, he runs right into a tree and like falls over backwards. Mm. And he just gets up and brushes himself off and keeps running. Meanwhile, the kid is behind him, just kind of slowly navigating through the forest like a normal human being.
That tree must have had outstanding closing speed. I was going to say lateral quickness, but I thought, well, that's more Walter Payton's side of things.
There you go. Hey, Robert, you're a Chicago guy now. I don't know if you've been there your whole life, but what was it like being able to be a part of a story like this, knowing the connection to Chicago and still the weight that Walter Payton's name carries in that area?
I mean, he's huge around there. And not knowing so much about the legacy, but just knowing how people talk about great Chicago sports figures, I'm really excited to see if people take the time to read this story. I liked it for the unorthodox workout stuff. Like the whole section on him working out is fascinating to me because I was one of those guys in high school who was like bored of going to the weight room and I looked for like weird things to go do. So I would like chop down a tree. I never thought to run into it as fast as I could. I mean, have you guys heard of more ridiculous workout off-season techniques than that?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I mean, I'm trying to think if there are any. I mean, some guys like to train on the sand. I don't know if that's ridiculous, though. That's not as ridiculous as running through the woods and the nature. Because if Walter Payton's running into a tree and getting knocked down, then that means he's going full speed. Full speed. Some guys have ran up hills. I think you had mention of that in here as well.
Sure.
I can't think of a more ridiculous one. What I want to ask you, because where does Payton rank among, and you've been in Chicago, what, 2 years now, Robert?
2 years.
From what you've picked up on, and I know you love to talk to people. You and I have had this conversation. I like to go in and talk to nobody when I go to a place.
which is terrible because you're such a great conversationalist.
Well, so they have to earn it from me, right?
Oh, my God.
That makes sense.
Screw me. That's the worst thing I've
said.
Yeah,
you shouldn't have said that.
who are the biggest Chicago sports figures now living or deceased, where does Peyton rank, and who, you know, give us the top three or four that you can sense in town? All time.
Well, you know, the town has the great baseball history, but it always feels like more of a football town. And I think people have this love affair with the Cubs, but you kind of have to win to have, like, iconic singular figures. You know, you go to a Cubs game, you get a beer, you get a Chicago dog, and it's just a nice time. But nobody has, like a favorite Cub that everybody is obsessed with. You know, it might have been Sammy Sosa if he wasn't such a weirdo. It's like a tie between Ditka and Walter Payton. And both of them have their flaws that Chicago people get upset with hearing about. I mean, the story that I wrote discusses the cheating on his wife and the drugs and painkiller use that was mentioned in the book written by Jeff Perlman in 2011. And then with Ditka, I mean, he's just got this reputation for doing awful things and being really inconsiderate all around town and struggling with alcohol and substances as well. So their stars aren't perfect, but I think the Chicago people kind of like to pretend that they are. It's interesting. Whereas, like, growing up in D.C., people kind of tear down the icons. Like, there's nobody that's as iconic as Walter Payton or Mike Ditka in D.C., I don't think.
How is it that we're having a conversation about biggest all-time Chicago sports figures and no one has said Michael Jordan at all?
Oh, well, yeah, I don't really watch basketball, so he didn't come to mind, but obviously he's number one. That's a gross oversight on my part.
Well, okay, but he's bigger than Dick and Peyton in town?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's number one, but in terms of, like, the things that I pay attention to.
Yeah, you know? No, I got you.
Yeah.
Robert, we can hear your cell phone going off in the background. Is grandma texting to say wrap it up? Or
No, that's our esteemed editor, Mark Mravick.
Uh-oh.
Calling me because I asked him to go over this story with me before it runs Tuesday, and that's me ignoring him.
Well, we better let you do it, because what are we at time-wise anyway?
About 15 minutes.
How late does Mravick stay up?
I've never known him to stay up this late, but I texted him like half an hour ago. So.
Oh, maybe we better let you go then. Do you ever get an email from Matt Gagne, our other editor at MMQB? You get emails. No, I mean, you get emails from him, but they'll come at hours that don't make sense.
Yeah. No, like, Matt is a workhorse, and he's got the kid and the wife, and he's super devoted to them, and that shines through. But also, I mean, I don't know many people that work harder than him.
All right, Robert, check out Boyhood.
Yeah.
And make sure you look up Andy Benoit's appearance on the Top 10 Jerseys episode of the Top 10 list.
What we need to do is find it and get a Vine. And I happen to know somebody at NFL Films. He's actually Ken. So I'm gonna get that. I'm gonna get that done this week.
Perfect.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Robert.
All right, later, guys.
Klemko called it Ken, the guy like who, you know, is in NFL Films.
Yeah.
It's his brother. Why wouldn't he just say brother instead of Ken?
I don't know.
And his brother's not named Ken. It's Ken. I can't forget what his brother's name is.
Well, hopefully he listens to the podcast and gets outraged.
Who, his brother?
And, yeah. He should. If he works at NFL Films, this should be his kind of cup of tea.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, sometimes you get, if you're in the industry, it loses its mystique a little bit.
We should be on the intercom at NFL Films. We'll talk to Greg about that next time. Playing constantly.
Oh, well, sometimes I am, because those top 10 shows run in the lobby.
Lucky
it's
them.
True. They run NFL Network in the lobby nonstop.
Now, right,
like, all day long. Could you imagine being the security guard that has to sit there and watch that all day long? NFL AM and then what? NFL Access repeated 8 times?
Ugh. Yeah. I wish that I wouldn't have watched. I turned on NFL Network right before the show when I was eating dinner. And I saw you on another top 10. And I didn't want to tell you, because then I saw you out of the more than just the cheerleader medium.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. But
okay. Why didn't you want to tell me?
Well, because it was more funny when all I knew that was
you were
doing the cheerleaders. So
I got you.
We're doing our NFC North offseason breakdown. We knocked out the AFC over 3 weeks, and we took a little break from the breakdown. Oh, that's too much. A little break from the breakdowns. But, Andy, we'll start with the Green Bay Packers, a team that seems to address their needs and the guys that they have, and that's all they need. They don't go out and spend money on anyone.
Well, they literally have not done that this year.
$0.
Peter King pointed out, yeah, they've spent $0. Now, that's not exactly – I mean, Mike McCarthy said it's like Groundhog's Day, which, by the way, that's a cliche that's become like Groundhog's Day in and of itself. That cliche needs to be retired. But it's not like Groundhog's Day because last year they signed Julius Peppers to really big money, and they're bringing him back on really big money, which surprises me. The Packers have had some things happen in free agency. They've just been very bad things that have happened to them, mainly losing their cornerbacks, Tremont Williams and Devon House. I can understand letting Williams get away.
Devon House.
I mean, he's not like old, but he is older, but you know, he's not washed up. But I can understand not re-signing him to a big deal, but only because I thought they'd be re-signing Devon House. I think House is going to be a sensational starter, and he's in Jacksonville now, and hopefully that works out. I don't know. I don't think he quite fits that scheme ideally. We'll see. He's a good player, though. They're going to miss him. They have a dire need at cornerback now because Casey Hayward, to me, and I might be wrong about this. We don't know because he hasn't done it. But to me, he is only a slot guy, a really, really good one. But he's a slot guy. I don't see him being the outside man press corner that they need, that they got out of Tremont Williams at the left cornerback spot. Now, maybe they know differently because I'm sure they've seen Hayward do some of that in practice. And maybe Hayward's had some snaps at that I'm just not recalling. But overall, the general approach to evaluating Hayward has been from the inside. Now they don't have that. And even if they move him outside, they need depth at the position.
Well, look what they did do this offseason. They re-signed Randall Cobb. They re-signed Brian Bulaga. They're apparently, at the point of this podcast being recorded, re-signing B.J. Raji and Latroy Guyon,
yeah.
There it is. And released A.J. Hawk. So, I mean, it has to be that the cornerback position is something they believe they can improve on through the draft. So, otherwise, there's not a real area on this team that you go that's a super need right now.
But if the I agree with you. But if the cornerback's a position they feel they can address in the draft, I don't know if I because now they're what you're basically saying is they think they can plug a rookie in there and play at some point. They've never done that before. Not that I can. Micah Hyde played a little bit as a rookie in the slot.
Aha, Clinton Dix played a lot.
Well, yeah, as a free safety, but yeah. They didn't plug him in as the starter either. He was their dime safety that they brought in on passing down. Sometimes their big nickel safety. So they've not been big on that. And I think the reason why is, I was going to say, you don't want to trust a rookie in man coverage, but there's nothing intellectual about man coverage most of the time. Zone coverage is where rookies would be more apt to struggle, actually. Whatever it is, they haven't felt comfortable putting rookies in there before. So maybe that changes. Maybe they think there's a lot of rookie corner. We haven't done corners with Greg yet, cornerbacks.
That'd
so
be fun.
I don't know. Yeah. And we'll do it towards the end. That may probably be the last position even. So I don't know, but they know what they have in house, and I'm surprised they let him get away. Maybe they didn't feel he was worth as much as Jacksonville did. I think he's worth what Jacksonville paid him.
Now, A.J. Hawk is gone. Do you believe Dom Capers is going to use Clay Matthews in the same way that he did last season, both inside and outside?
He might, because they don't have a lot at linebacker. Sam Barrington can be an every-down player, at least a base package starter, and I think he can – he runs well. I think he can be pretty good in nickel for him. Carl Bradford, their fourth-round pick last year, we need to see more from him. But how those two guys pan out will probably determine what they do with Clay Matthews. And if they do find a rookie they really like, maybe they plug one in at that position. They don't need Matthews to be on the outside because they've got Nick Perry. They have Julius Peppers. And let's keep in mind, they also have Mike Neal, who's gotten a lot better. What we're talking about with Matthews, it's not like he plays inside linebacker every single snap. In certain important passing situations, he still comes off of the edge. And Green Bay's blitz schemes with Capers, the way the inside linebacker's used, Matthews can be almost as active as a pass rusher just coming from a different location. You can still loop Matthews around on the outside with some of the zone blitz stuff that they do. I mean, there are ways to use Clay Matthews. This inside and outside stuff gets a little bit overblown. It is unusual, though, to see a superstar guy change positions like this, but he's still been a superstar even at inside linebacker.
Now, on the inside of that defensive line, B.J. Raji out the whole season last
year. So he's on a one-year prove-it deal now.
Yeah. And
which he's been on for, like, the balance of his career, it seems.
Now, Latroy Guyon was his replacement, so they get both for about $6 million. Do you like that move?
I do like that move. You hedge against one or the other. They obviously don't feel – well, what was Guyon's total contract?
That's $3 million. 1 year, $3
million. Oh, he just a 1 year
Both
deal.
Both of them on 1 year deals, but I think.
You said $6 million between them. Do we know? We don't know Raji.
Together. Both
of them. So Raji got $3 million as well.
That's what it's reported
as of now.
That's what
we're expecting him to get.
But do you think the Packers were aided at all by the legal troubles, LaTroy Guy?
Yes.
Because
he got arrested,
and so now they're like, well, you know, we'll give you 1 year, see what you got.
Yeah, because no one else was giving him anything.
And Packers.
So Raji's had injury issues. He's also been very inconsistent. Guyon's got, even though the money was, you know, he got busted for $180,000 cash and then about a truckload of marijuana. The money
and
they
guns.
Actually
there were guns too.
Yeah, okay. Well, the money they explained, it was actually he'd cashed one of his checks, and NFL players, that's what you're going to get if you cash the check out. But you still have to account for the guns and the marijuana. The guns actually were registered. I remember that now. Okay. But, okay, that leaves the marijuana, which isn't as bad as to some people. But the quantity of it, all of this kind of, it just doesn't
feel
right.
Well, but when you put the money with the guns and the pot, then it, I mean, even if some of them are registered, the cash was yours and the guns are registered,
even then
it doesn't look good in the same setting.
In the very least, he's screwing around at a highly immature or lowly immature, however you look at it, level.
And at 27 years old, you praised him quite a bit last season for what he did for Raji.
He got a lot better as the year went on. I thought he had, by his standards, a great season, and he looked like a starter to me. I think he would have been in line for a really good contract, not a great one. I mean, he's not going to be a $15 million guaranteed guy, but I thought he might get 10.5. So now he has to do it one time over again, and the problem is now he probably is splitting snaps with Raji. So we'll see which direction the Packers go. It will not go this way 2 years in a row, though. They're not going to get Raji and LaTroy Guyon. They better hope they don't get him back on one-year contracts next year. They want someone to show themselves and win the competition, so to speak.
We talked about a lot of pass rushing there with the Packers. Speaking of pass rushing, with the Chicago Bears, Jared Allen, the defensive end, still says he's really good. Do you agree?
You know, I've learned not to doubt Jared Allen before because there have been
times. He's a very silence the haters kind of guy.
And he's done it before. And there were times where I think he's an exceptional player. He got sick last season. I have to remember that now. And he got lost a bunch of weight. But he also didn't stand out at any point before that either. So I'm not – I think Allen has – his better days are behind him. His best days are behind him. But when he says, I'm still really good, I don't roll my eyes at that the way that I normally would roll my eyes with a player in his circumstances saying that.
Few moves for the Bears.
Let me add one more thing. I'm sorry. It just occurred to me. They are going to move to a 3-4. And Jared Allen does not want – he's even said, I don't want to do that.
That would look a little odd.
Yeah, because I don't know what position he plays. He's not a 4 – or he's not a 3-4 D, and he doesn't have the weight. He's not a very good play-side run defender at this point in his career. He's an active one, but he's not a strong, engaging, and then disengage type of play-side run defender. And I don't see him burning the edge coming out of a two-point stance as a pass rusher. So he might still be good, but he very well might not have a chance to show it this year.
A few other moves, though, on that defense. Pernell McPhee, outside linebacker, $16 million guaranteed. But Stephen Pye is gone on the inside. How do you think that loss will show itself next season?
Well, we have to see what scheme Fangio ultimately does run because – and Paya would have been a 3-4 DN for him. In fact, that's what Washington paid him to become. If Washington chooses to stay in that, we don't know what their scheme will be either under Joe Barry, their new D coordinator. But they drafted Ego Ferguson in the second round last year and Will Sutton in the third round. So they have options there. But if Vic Fangio does indeed stay with the 3-4, and the selection of Pernell McPhee to me suggests they will stay with that because McPhee is a multiple hybrid type of player, then they need a nose tackle somewhere. And so all the discussion about the defensive line, it's almost irrelevant until they get a nose tackle. Now, maybe it's Jay Ratliff, who played nose tackle for Dallas. He's never been a quintessential prototype, but maybe that's who they feel is there. I think my guess is they don't quite know what they have in personnel yet at this point. And I could see them in the draft. Maybe their best approach is doing what every team says it does, but no team actually does do, and that is take the best player available and just see what you have come training camp. It's going to probably be a two-year process because they don't have good linebackers either, and their secondary is very average. So maybe they take the talent they have, because I mentioned McPhee being a hybrid type player. He's also a really good nickel defensive tackle. So you could be a 4-3, but then McPhee becomes a backup because I don't think he's an every down defensive lineman. So there's a lot. I mean, we're just throwing wet noodles on the wall at this point. And I think that's what the Bears are doing.
Could one of those noodles be Antrell Roll too in that secondary? I mean, they needed someone. They didn't have a single safety. So,
yeah, and Antrell Roll gives them a veteran presence. That'll probably help the development of Brock Vereen, who I think they wanted to get in the lineup last year and didn't quite get him in there as much as they'd hoped. And that means that Vereen wasn't as developed as they'd hoped. Tim Jennings at corner, Kyle Fuller at corner. Those are good cornerbacks in a zone scheme. But it goes back to, what is Fangio going to do? He did zone and man-to-man in San Francisco. So Vic Fangio can coach any system, though.
Now, we've talked all defense with the Bears. One of the bigger surprises this offseason, which we've talked about on past podcasts, was Brandon Marshall going over to the Jets in the trade. Now, the Bears did sign Eddie Royal as a free agent. $10 million guaranteed.
Is that how much he got?
$10 million guaranteed. And it's been announced
that
Jay Cutler is the starting cornerback for now. And
yeah, John Fox has not been too vocal in supporting Cutler.
It's been awkward.
But he also hasn't been trashing Cutler. And I think it'd be easy for the media to make it out like he has. Like, oh, there's a quarterback competition in Chicago. But what Fox has basically said is there's a competition at every one of our positions. Now, Fox never did say that when he had Peyton Manning in Denver, though. So they don't know what they have in Cutler. I can't believe Eddie Royal got $10 million guaranteed.
That's a lot of money.
So you're willing, but you didn't want to pay Brandon Marshall for one more year.
Yeah, and I think
Now the cap hits are probably different, probably different cap circumstances, but you can always adjust money and kick a can down the road to make the cap work. They could have done that with Marshall too, I would imagine.
Well, like what Andrew Brandt taught us with these signing bonuses, is the Bears are probably getting most of that guaranteed money with Eddie Royal out during this first season, not prorating.
True. It's too much money, no matter which way they dice it
True.
Up, though. And Royal's a very similar type of player to Marcus Wilson, who last year was supposed to come on. They think he'll be a good, fast, dynamic slot guy for them someday. I think this needs to be a run-based offense anyway, though, John. I think you need to build around Matt Forte.
Best player last year.
He's been their best player for a lot of years, you could argue. I mean, these receivers have been good. When they've been good, they've been great.
He led the team in receptions.
Well, because that is a style of play.
Yeah.
That was a dump off. And that's what, when I say build the running game, I guess I mean that as well. The ball control game. Really commit to that if you go to a running base, let's just put it back on the run for a second. If you go to a run based approach, that is conducive to more play action passes, ultimately, more passes out of base personnel, which means you get Jay Cutler facing defenses that don't know if it's run or pass yet, and are probably in very basic looks. I think that's how you get Cutler back on track. There's certainly talent there to work with. No one so far has been able to fully get the talent to turn into results, although we do forget Cutler had this team in the NFC Championship game back in 2010, I think it was. But
he hasn't won a playoff game since then.
True, and we haven't seen the results. So I think you tighten the leash on him a little bit, but without directly tightening the leash, you bring in the parameters around him. You shrink the yard that he has to run around in, to keep a dog metaphor going here, and give him a simpler offensive approach. And that would mean going through Matt Forte. That also would make very good use of Martellus Bennett as more of a possession target.
Another team in this division that has been grounded in the run for a few years now, Minnesota Vikings. It seems unlikely that Adrian Peterson will be there the way things are going now. But just
I don't know if I agree with that.
So let's go under the assumption that he is in Minnesota next season. They can't trade the contract, and he has to play for Minnesota.
Yeah.
How good can the offense be there in Minnesota with year two Teddy Bridgewater quarterback and Adrian Peterson, still one of the league's best running backs in the backfield?
Well, I'd like to pump the brakes on Bridgewater a little bit. My colleague Greg Bedard wrote a very promising or heavy praise piece about Bridgewater this week.
You're not a big Bridgewater guy?
No, I'm all right with them, but I think it's, and I know they are very big on him in Minnesota, but I think it's a little early. He played well down the stretch, but he was in a tightly controlled offense. That Jay Cutler thing we were just talking about, that was Bridgewater's system last year.
Can you hear that? It's Vikings fan beginning to type. At Andy underscore Benoit.
Oh, that's right. Vikings fans are sensitive to Bridgewater.
Yeah, you can't say anything. He's like this new golden child. It's interesting.
His game against Miami in week 16 last year was phenomenal. And if that's a harbinger for his career, then all the Bridgewater praise is actually understating it. But there were 15 other games I think he played in, something like that. And it was just, he was tightly managed at times. And we need to see it a second year. And also teams have seen him as well. They got a Mike Wallace for him. So if Mike Wallace becomes a deep threat in that system, and Norv Turner's system, by the way, is very big on just not just the deep ball, but the concept of a deep passing game. And let's say a typical system, let's say there's a 12-yard hook route that's being run, all right? And Norv Turner's system, that hook route would be 14 or 15 yards. Everything's just a little bit more vertical with Turner. And he believes in getting the ball to his receivers between the 20s and then hitting his tight ends in the red zone. That's the approach. Wallace would help in this sense. Now, he's going to have to improve his route running. We say that every year about Mike Wallace. But if that's the system and it's that kind of drop-back approach, then I think Bridgewater has better resources around him this year than he had last year, certainly. And keep in mind, there's also Charles Johnson, who came on strong last year.
What's wrong with Cordarrelle Patterson? I mean, as a guy that just is watching him from the outside, you're the film analyst here. I see him, and I'm like, why isn't he so good?
I think he's a little bit immature, just as from what I hear. Not in a bad way, like you worry about him getting arrested or something, not like that, but just that he doesn't quite – he's got to understand how the professional process works. And he has not been as good as he thinks he is at times. So he's an unrefined route runner. There are things he flat out can't do on offense, it appears, and his playing time has suffered because of that. So he needs to be humbled, which I think hopefully if he wasn't humbled last year, he won't be. And
it was bad last year.
Yeah, a guy this talented should not be sitting on the bench. So unless it's a gross coaching error, he's done something wrong. And there were times where they put Patterson in the game and the results, they got the exact wrong thing out of him, that he was supposed to do this, he did that. It's just a young guy symptom. So, yeah, I mean, it's what are you going to do? And they did their best to give him the ball. They throw a lot of wide receiver screens to him. In fact, every time, I think his first snap on the field, like four games in a row or something, I think I saw a wide receiver screen thrown to him. So I like Cordarrelle Patterson's skill set. I'm sure they do as well. But it's about more than just his talent, probably, rather than his skill set. That's a better way to say it.
We know the holes that the Bears have on defense. The Packers, we mentioned some key guys leaving there. Detroit Lions, obviously, and Ndamukong Suh is a big guy we'll get to next. Is there an argument that the Minnesota Vikings have the most well-rounded defense in the NFC North?
Yeah, there's definitely an argument for that because the secondaries have improved tremendously.
Harrison Smith at safety.
Yeah, I like him a lot too. He's versatile. We knew he'd be pretty good in Mike Zimmer's system. He'll play the Reggie Nelson role. He has played the Reggie Nelson role, which means he blitzes off the edge at times and he covers in the two split safety packages or looks in the coverages, two split safety looks. He covers extremely well. I like Anthony Barr a lot as an A-gap blitzer especially. And that defensive line is very talented. It's not what they have in, like, St. Louis, but it's Everson Griffin, Sharif Floyd. Sharif Floyd needs to pick it up, though. That's one guy that has been a lot quieter than expected, and we haven't seen the dynamic skill set from him on a consistent basis. But the talent is there to work with along that whole defensive line.
Is Terrence Newman still serviceable, 36 years old, cornerback that they signed?
You know, the book on Newman is that he's always good when he's playing for Zimmer. And when he's not playing for Zimmer, he's not good. And that was true in Dallas, and that was true last year in Cincinnati, where Newman didn't ultimately keep his starting job. Now, maybe that was because – and that was Zimmer's first year out of Cincinnati. Now, maybe that was Newman getting benched. That may have been because he was 35 and age has caught up to him. We'll find out. But Zimmer has a way of getting through to Newman – and it has to do with the way he teaches the mechanics and the way he expects fundamentals and consistency out of Terrence Newman in that regard. So we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought Newman in as much as anything to now become an extra teacher for them. They do need depth at cornerback. Not a lot, though. I mean, they've got their three guys, in my opinion. They've got Xavier Rhodes, Josh Robinson, and Captain Munnerly.
I like Robinson.
Yeah, I like Robinson. He's athletic. I think he was the fastest guy at the Combine or something like that a few years ago. But he can break on a pass. He can break on the ball. Newman's the fourth-best corner on their roster, so it's possible that they just want him here to help teach stuff in camp, and maybe they keep him around during the season as an insurance policy.
By now, everyone obviously knows about the Ndamukong Suh situation. Choosing Miami over Detroit seems to be completely money-based in that decision. Do you think the Lions will still be okay? Haloti Ngata coming in the middle, and Ziggy Ansah coming into another year. You've been high on Ansah rushing the passer at the DN position.
Because he's extremely good. I mean, he's lanky and explosive.
And young.
Love Very youth. Young. And they've got other guys like him as well. George Johnson, I believe, is pretty lanky because, if I'm not mistaken, I got him confused with Devin Taylor regularly last year. And Devin Taylor's, what is Devin Taylor's size? He's 6'7", 265. Guys that big, that kind of frame, don't usually thrive in the NFL. But if they can, if they can put the skill set behind it, then they're extremely unique, exceptionally hard to block against because blockers, if guys don't make it at that size, and blockers also aren't used to facing guys of that size. This has a chance to still be a good pass rush. They're very weak in the middle, though. Haloti Ngata is one man. They need two to start, and they need about three or four to have a good rotation there. Right now they've got one, and that's Haloti Ngata.
So then what's differently schematically with that front when it includes Haloti Ngata instead of Ndamukong Suh? What do you see from that defense each snap?
Possibly more two-gap stuff, possibly. And that would be on the base downs. I think they'll blitz a little bit more, which means that if they're going to blitz more, that means they're going to need some corners because they got lucky with Rasheem Mathis last year. Mathis really overachieved. He's been a zone corner his entire career, and they brought him back. They re-signed him. But I'm sure they believe that we can't catch lightning in a bottle twice with that guy. And Darius Slay improved a lot, but if Mathis is your number two or the guy on the opposite side, he'd be the right cornerback in their scheme, then that's the guy teams would go after. It almost doesn't matter if Slay's improved because you have a weak spot for offenses to target. They need man-to-man corners in order to blitz, which would offset the Ndamukong Suh loss.
Now, during the season, didn't you say the same thing about the back end of that secondary, too, that Glover Quinn was playing above his normal ability? He seemed to be everywhere last season.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall. I mean, I could go back.
In that comeback against the Saints, we all remember that one.
Well, that was a great play that he made, the interception late in the game. But James Ahedibo is a guy that I think overachieved more. I've always been big on Quinn.
Okay.
I've always thought he can cover. I know he can. I've seen him do it in Houston. He can cover tight ends, drop into the box, and be effective there. And I think that's where he's at his best. He can play deep and be your free safety if you need. But I don't think that's the best use of Glover Quinn. Now, the issue is you have James Ahedibo, who is also a box safety, very much a box safety. You definitely don't want Ahedibo back at free safety. In fact, he got benched against Green Bay last season. I think a lot of people believed it's because he hadn't played well, and he hadn't. But also, he didn't match up to that offensive system well. Green Bay was a three-receiver offense, which they'll be again this year. And they didn't want Ahedibo on the field against three wide receivers. He's not a space player. So they've got two safeties who are very similar. So they need a safety, not a dire need. I mean, they did all right last year with those guys, but if they could get a safety, they could become a lot more multiple on defense. And they're going to, again, if you're losing talent, and they have, they're not as talented, then you have to do something with your scheme to compensate. That would be blitzing or disguising. Both of those are they're contingent on being multiple. So get a safety to become more multiple. That's the fastest way to do it.
In Peter's columns, we're often given travel advice and beer advice.
King's columns?
Yes. At the end of our podcast, I think you should give one movie recommendation from here on out.
Oh, okay. I like
that. What's your parting? What movie can you leave our listeners with?
Can I do a book instead this week?
Mm.
What?
Because I'll watch the movie. You're not Peter. You're Andy Benoit. Be your own man.
All right, then I'm doing a book. Let me tell you.
I'm not going to listen to you then.
Let me tell you, I think the best writer I've encountered is Richard Yates. He's dead now. He was way back in the day. And I don't usually read things from generations before me because the verbiage changes. I just find it boring. Just like I won't watch any movie before 1992 because they all suck at that point.
Jeremiah Johnson, Robert Redford.
If you're seeing
Academy Award, whatever.
If you're seeing them for the first, if you've seen them before, like you grew up with them, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
yeah,
that's great. But if you haven't seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because what happens is those movies set such trends that they become they originate the cliches, the old tired jokes. They go back and obviously the acting might be fine, but the set doesn't look as good. It's the special effects are non-existent, and if there's jokes involved, the jokes are tired. Go any movie before 92, if I haven't seen it already, I'll never see.
So
it.
So it's a floating 23-year space that I can choose from movies. I actually think it's an interesting theory. I might actually go with that.
Well, yeah, it just makes all the sense in the world. But Richard Yates, as a writer, he's even though he's way back in the day, he has such a way with words. He's the best. I think he's the best pure writer I've ever read.
And what is the book?
His two big books. The one I just read this week, which was also a movie in 2008, again starring Kate Winslet. That's twice for her on this podcast. It was Leonardo DiCaprio, is Revolutionary Road.
Never seen.
See it. I'm surprised you haven't seen it. And it deserved Oscar nomination. It may have gotten some, but it came out at like the absolute worst time for Oscar nomination.
Like a week after the Oscars?
It was something like that, if I recall.
Or October.
I could be wrong, but someone told me that. I could be wrong. So that's one of his books, Revolutionary Road. The other one is a bunch of short stories, 11 of them, and it's called 11 Kinds of Loneliness.
Yeah, I like this. This is a nice little
thing. I'm telling you, John, this guy is – I went through this book in 5 days. I'll read for an hour a day out of a book, but I don't get through it within – it takes 2 weeks to get through a book. This one I got through in 5 days.
Okay, if Peter gets a haiku, you want a sonnet and we'll get out of here?
Sure. Sure.
Oh, not from me. I wanted – this is you, man.
Oh, God, no. No,
remember,
we're done.
You're
done.
The talent.
We've been chummy enough. Let's wrap this thing
Subscribe
up.
Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow Andy at Andy_Benoit on Twitter or myself at Ingles Angle. Thanks for listening, and we'll get you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.